Tonight's show is sponsored by Recycle Processes, Inc. and Sakat Foundation of America. Assalamu alaikum, peace and blessings be upon you. Good evening, you're listening to Radio Swam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago, Illinois. I'm your host, Olivia Richardson. Radio Swam is a live call and talk radio program airing every day from 6 to 7 p.m. Central, and we reach the world by streaming live at radioswam.com. You can tap into all of our prior shows as well. If you also would like to, you can post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/radioswamusa or tweet at radioswamusa if you have any questions or comments, or give us a call at 312-263-4752. Tonight we'll be talking with Yvonne Maffey. She is the author of My Halal Kitchen and has actually written a wonderful book that I've had the pleasure of reading on halal food. But we're going to talk about Ramadan because it's literally right around the corner. So we're bringing her on tonight to talk about healthy food and things that we can do for Ramadan to make this a good Ramadan. Obviously, Ramadan is not strictly about food, but at the same time, it's, you know, making sure we survive throughout the day or, you know, last throughout the day is certainly something that can help make your spiritual journey a little bit more successful during this month. So without further ado, we bring on Yvonne Maffey. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam, Olivia. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. So, yeah, Ramadan is literally, I guess, potentially 1 to 2 days away at this point. And so if it's not too late, is there anything that people can start doing to prepare for Ramadan? I know some people say, like, fast early, but in terms of food, is there maybe anything that could be helpful or healthy for us?
Yeah, I see so many wonderful things in the market right now. And I think one of the things that is such an easy tip to do is to buy potted herbs and just keep them in the windowsill or, you know, outside if you have outdoor space. But, you know, they add a lot of flavor to food, a lot of kick. And it's just you're not running around trying to add freshness to meals, and it's just a really healthy way to go and, you know, not stress yourself out about having, you know, fresh things to cut and just have easy access. So I'm looking at what's really nice and seasonal in the market, and the potted herbs are just so beautiful right now.
Yeah.
And then any other, like, fruits and vegetables that you feel are summer, you know, seasonal, local to your area, you know, get them and start preparing them. Cut them up, maybe even freeze them or flash, flash boil them a little bit so that you freeze them. That way they can be, you know, used on the grill or something like that. You know, just kind of like see what's local, what's seasonal, and readily available for you to cook easy and still have, like, the nice, healthy things at your disposal. Because I think the thing that's the hardest for us is, you know, starting to, you know, cook a meal at the last minute and then, you know, realizing, like, oh, I don't have anything that's very healthy. And then we start frying and we start, you know, doing things that really aren't so healthy just to get a quick meal on the table. And that's what we want to avoid this year.
Absolutely, yeah. And so speaking of fresh foods, is there, like, a particular dish that, let's say, for suhoor that can be easy? Because I know breakfast food is usually something for me, like, as an American, I'm like, I don't know what to eat, I guess. I mean, you know, so is there anything you recommend across cultures or anything for suhoor?
No, for me personally, I like a few essentials in suhoor. I like to have some hydrating fruits, like watermelons, are just so perfect. It's anything you can do with watermelon. It's where I like to make drinks. I know that sounds a little bit, you know, afternoonish, but really having, like, a drink, put watermelon in the blender with raspberries or with strawberries. I mean, you know, give yourself a nice fruit drink. But you have to have some protein with that, too, so you're not, you know, just consuming sugar. But melons have so much water in them, and that's just really what you need to get you through the day. So you want your body to be hydrated really well at the start of the day. That's one thing. The other thing I really like, and some people just really want a sort of cereal type of thing or something that evokes a cereal because it's just so early in the morning, and a lot of people can't handle meat and protein. I personally am fine with having, you know, some meat in the morning, like beef strips or not, sorry, like turkey strips, something lighter than, you know, than that. But yeah. it depends on the person. So when someone really wants something more cereal-like or light, I recommend things like maybe like a yogurt parfait or something, you know, that has yogurt with maybe dates and honey and some nuts in it. You know, just kind of like give yourself some crunch and some dairy and some, you know, we're going to have plenty of dates around. So that was one of the most popular recipes that I posted last year, was this, you know, banana date cup. And I actually posted it for an iftar idea, but I think it's just great at Sahur too, because, you know, it's just very light, and then it's a little filling in the sense that you can have other things with it. But if that was the only thing you had, you'd probably be okay too.
Cool. Yeah, I think I've heard that like some cereals or like granola or oats can be really good for lasting, I guess, throughout the day, or kind of starving off some hunger or giving you energy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there anything that maybe people should avoid, especially with Sahur?
Oh, definitely the sugars. Anything high in particularly processed sugars. I'm always warning that, because you don't need to crash, you know, in the middle of the day. We want to avoid that. That's why I always say, you know, try to find some balance between, you know, the fruits and some protein, because, you know, protein will kind of balance out that sugar. But when we're having sugar, it should be the natural stuff, you know, some honey and the fruits. But anything, you know, like, I don't know, certain power bars or, you know, fruit-laden sugar or cereals, those just really aren't going to, they're not going to do anything for you throughout the day. In fact, they're really going to make you feel tired and hungry at like maybe 10, 11 o'clock. And you just don't want to do that to yourself. So try to go with very natural, very nutrient dense foods, and also nothing too oily or nothing too heavy, because then you might fall back asleep and not be able to get up and, you know, not feel good. So the point of the fasting is not to, you know, feel terrible. So we really need to take care of that sahur and make sure it's nice and healthy and light enough that we're not dragging throughout the day, but substantial enough that it does, you know, give us some ability to work and do all the normal activities that we're supposed to do throughout the day.
Cool. I know last Ramadan, I think I was kind of like pressed maybe for time, because waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning wasn't as easy. So is there like anything that you like recommend, either like to cook quickly or make quickly, or maybe prep beforehand, that can go well with Sahur? Or?
Oh yeah. One of my best things I probably have ever done is to prepare. While I'm cleaning up for iftar, I like to think about the next morning sahur, because I'm already in the kitchen, my hands are already messy with, you know, things going on, and I'm already in the mode of the kitchen, and I haven't cleaned everything up, because once everything's clean, it's really hard to want to dig stuff back out. So I try to prep sahur at that time. And one of the things I found to be very useful is to make the start of an omelet at that time. So I'll put eggs with a little bit of milk or cream in a bowl with whatever leftover, like, veggies that I have, like tomatoes or zucchini, whatever. Even if it's just cheese or plain, you know, however you like your omelet. And then I just put those all in a bowl, cover it, stick it in the fridge. And then when I'm groggy, waking up for sahur, I just light the fire on the stove, put some butter in the pan, and, you know, start cooking that omelet. It's ready to go. So you're not, you know, chopping and prepping, and, you know, every minute counts, actually, in the morning at sahur time. So, you know, it's a time saver, but it's also just a mind saver because you're not having to think about what am I making when I'm half asleep trying to get this all on the table.
Right, absolutely. Anything you recommend for people who might not be able to cook? That's actually something, a weird thing that I ran into last year, was like not always having a kitchen to cook in. So anything maybe easy that people can do if they can't cook, per se?
People who don't have a kitchen to cook in?
Yeah, or just don't have access to it for some reason or another. Is that anything?
Yeah, for sahur?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think yogurt and nuts and fruits are really, really good for that, because you can, buy small containers of yogurt and have some fruit, like bananas, you can easily cut those or, throw that into some yogurt. We're always probably going to have dates on hand, so I guess I'm going to refer back to that original recipe because it was so easy. But if you know, for college kids or somebody who has a shared kitchen, yeah, you have limited space, get things like in the fridge, like yogurt and some dairy, and in the cabinet, some honey, maybe some coconut flakes or something, because that adds some nice texture, and some granola or nuts. I mean, I think those go a long way, and you can kind of come up with a lot of varieties of things. There's another recipe I really like, which is just some cut up fruit, like strawberries, which you can actually do with bananas, add some honey and some nuts, and it's kind of like a little cereal, but the honey kind of gives you some energy and the fruit is hydrating. So there's a combo of things like that, I think, that are pretty useful. I think on the go stuff, the only danger is, again, having anything with too much sugar. So, if you can find sources of things with low sugar or no sugar, like fruit bars and things like that, those can be good alternatives. But really definitely look at the amount of sugar in what you're buying.
Definitely. All right, so we will actually take a quick break. We'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll continue the conversation and maybe talk a little bit about iftar and other things that can help us. So stay with us. If you have any questions for our guest, if you have any comments or questions as well, please feel free to give us a call at 312-263-4752. We'll be right back after the break.
Needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Would your business survive a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Radio Islam, the nation's first daily live call-in talk radio show produced by Muslims for the mainstream market. Radio Islam, on the air since 2004 because of your generosity. Radio Islam salutes its most valuable asset, you, our listener. From our producers to our interns, we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago. We reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com. You can view all of our prior shows. Radio Islam is a live call and talk road program airing every day from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. And we reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com. You can post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Radio Islam USA and our Twitter at Radio Islam USA, as well as listen to any past shows at soundcloud.com/Radio Islam USA. All social media handles are Radio Islam USA. But if you'd like to give us a call or have any questions for tonight, then please call us at 312-263-4752. And so we have Yvonne Maffey here. She is the author of My Halal Kitchen, which is a wonderful book that teaches you how to cook halal. And so we're kind of talking about some, you know, pre-Ramadan and during Ramadan things that we can do to, you know, be prepared and have a successful Ramadan. So before we kind of jump into maybe iftar, is there anything that you recommend maybe like during suhoor that you can do with your family in terms of like either like anything you recommend either with food or just conversation with your family during suhoor?
Well, I don't know. It depends how awake we are. Most of the time, I feel like people eat in silence because everybody's so tired.
Yeah.
And kind of gets up groggy. Unless you stay up all night and you know, go straight into the suhoor, which, you know, I'm sure every family has a different schedule.
Right.
I think a good thing to do is really kind of think about suhoor the night before. You know, if you have kids, get them to help you set the table for the night before. After iftar is all cleared up and all the dishes are done, and you know, just set the suhoor table. Get them involved with the next morning's meal, and then hopefully, inshallah, they'll be ready to go with you, you know, at suhoor time, and they'll feel a little invested in that. You know, and if everybody is awake enough to talk about things, you know, kind of just think about, you know, what's going on in the day, how can you help mom get iftar on the table that day? Or is there anything you need from the store? Is there anything you can pick up? Is there a farmer's market today? Maybe you can get some fresh goods. I mean, you know, conversation about looking forward to the day, the week, you know, things like that. I think those are all, you know, nice conversations that kind of wake people up if they're in the mood.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's kind of a little early.
It is pretty early. I tend to not have, like, you know, lengthy conversations at suhoor, but I'm sure every family is different.
Yeah. But then what about, like, I know with iftar, right? So it's kind of one of those moments where you're like, you fasted all day, and so you just kind of really want to eat food. But I know sometimes, like, one time I kind of overate, unfortunately. And I know that's, like, you know, the part of Ramadan is, like, not overeating. And so I feel like it kind of leaves me drowsy. And then when it came to suhoor, I was like, I'm actually not hungry at the moment because I just still kind of felt stuffed. Is there any way – because I know at the same time, like, if I don't eat, I'm going to be, you know, really upset later. Is there anything you can do for that, or maybe just drink more water? Is there recommendations there?
Yeah, I think this is a sort of a vulnerability we have on our part of, like, feeling like at iftar time we have to eat so much because we're afraid of, you know, maybe we won't wake up for suhoor or we're just so hungry. I think we kind of have to really rely on the prophetic advice of, you know, one third air, one third food, one third water, and not overdo it. Even though, yeah, we fasted all day, but remember, at least here in Chicago, you know, we have plenty of time to eat throughout the night. So, you know, eat properly at iftar. Don't overdo it. If you're hungry a few hours later, have a little something. But kind of make an intention to really have that suhoor. There's a reason why it's a sunnah, and it's because it's really good for us. So you're getting this chance to eat at the very last hours or the last moments before the fasting day starts. So really take advantage of that, because it really just, you know, change the mindset, change your frame of thinking that, you know, it's better for me to have something closer to that time that fasting starts than, you know, filling up at midnight and then not having anything before suhoor or at suhoor and then being really hungry throughout the day. So you kind of have to, like, maybe look at what time you're breaking the fast and what time is suhoor, and break it into, you know, three meals or something like that. You know, everybody's a little different, but, you know, if you're going to the Taraweeh prayers, maybe take some snacks and some water so that you feel, you know, like you are actually eating something, or, but not too much. And then at some more time, you'll have an actual, you'll be hungry. So I think we just really need to change our mindset and really realize like that. So hunger is meant to happen for a reason. And just don't skip it. If you really, really, really feel like you can't have anything, then at least have a few glasses of water, at least.
Cool. Absolutely. And then, so kind of speaking about iftar, are there any like sort of family favorites that you guys like to have or anything like that? Like what's a good meal for iftar, I suppose?
Yeah, it changes all the time. I think in the first week, everyone, I feel like everybody really likes their traditional, you know, cultural foods in the first week because we love Ramadan, right? We feel like it's celebratory and we want things that are comforting and remind us of family and culture. So every culture has a different, you know, food or dish that breaks the fast. So for me, it started out with, you know, some Italian dishes. And then I realized quickly, like, some of those pastas were just too heavy.
Yeah.
I needed to lighten them up. But I love the flavors of, you know, sauce and vegetables. And so, you know, when Ramadan is in the summer, like it is now, I like, you know, I like something like ratatouille, which is great in Ramadan because I can cook it all day. It's just layers and layers of vegetables and herbs and cooked in tomato sauce. And then by the end of the day, after it's cooked a few hours, you have a really substantial amount of vegetables that are very hydrating. And then you can serve it with couscous or rice or even pasta, whatever. You know, but it's light and it's just got the flavors that I love. And I can add meat sauce to that so I have some meat in it. And, you know, that's sort of a favorite of mine because it's seasonal. You know, if it's wintertime, it's going to be something different. But that's sort of one of my go-tos. I'm really light on the pastas and the rice in Ramadan just because I feel too heavy when I eat those things. So I kind of beef up the protein and the vegetables, and I feel so much better that way.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that's something that happens a lot with me. It was like, there's so much rice, and rice is good because it easily fills you up immediately, but then it feels a little heavy afterwards.
It does. It really does. It feels, you know, you feel a little bloated, you feel, you know, heavy, but yet you didn't really have, you know, the protein that you need to get by or, you know, the hydration. So I think, you know, have like a very small portion of those carbs and then fill up your plate with the veggies and leave room for some protein. Vegetarians, you know, have, you know, beans or something, you know, non-meat, but definitely have that plate really colorful and very full of the things that are going to be nutritious for you.
And can you have, I suppose you always can have too much of something, but is there like an aim for how much protein that we should be going for? Do you know, or anything?
I don't really know in terms of grams and things like that, but I would say, you know, go with what makes you feel good, what makes you feel like you can get through the day, what makes you feel like, you know, your clothes are fitting properly, but, you know, think about how your body feels after you've eaten a meal. You know, I think that, and this goes back to that concept of conscious living, conscious eating. It's such a, you know, popular, trendy phrase, but it is part of the Islamic way of eating, right? To be conscious of what we're having. So pay attention to if you realize that, you know, this is way too much rice for me and I'm just feeling really stuffed, the next time, you know, cut back. You know, see, look at your plate, see what you're eating. Don't just, you know, eat mindlessly and, you know, talk without, you know, realizing what you're putting in your mouth. You know, I think, and every person is very different, but, you know, if you're trying to gain weight or trying to lose weight, maybe you need to look at, you know, particular grams of everything. But I personally, I really go by, how do I feel? You know, if I've had too much sugar, I get a really massive headache. And I didn't realize it was sugar until I paid attention. And so now I, you know, I really, really can say no to sugary things or things I know have sugar because I don't feel good when I eat them. So again, it's just going back to consciously, you know, deciding what we put into our bodies.
And you brought up a really good point. You said, like, being conscious. And I know that you and I talked a little bit about, like, conscious eating or, like, not just eating halal food, but, like, the part of, I guess, eating halal is not just, like, is it to these certain standards, but is it sustainable? Is it good for, like, the environment? So is there a way that we can – any recommendations for making, I guess, this Ramadan a little bit more conscious in that effort as well?
Yeah, and this is what I touched on in my book, because I didn't want to just, you know, involve recipes. I mean, we can have, you know, lots of ideas for cooking halal recipes, and that's wonderful. Yeah. But I guess the point I was trying to make in this book was also that we need to also pay attention to tayyib. Allah says in the Quran, eat what is halal, permissible, and eat what is tayyib, you know, pure, wholesome. And that is it's actually a very popular thing in the food world today to look at, you know, where does our food come from? Is it sourced properly? Are the animals being humanely treated? I mean, we have this in our deen already. This is part of the way we're supposed to eat. So, yes, I'm looking for halal food and meats and so on, but do we really know? Are we just paying attention to the slaughter? Or are we paying attention to the farm? How was that animal treated? How was it fed? Did it have, you know, an appropriate life, you know, that animals are supposed to be given? I mean, this is again, you know, really getting conscious about where our food is coming from. That whole farm to fork concept is very important. Even you can even go deeper and say, you know, are people being treated properly in those farms and plants and slaughterhouses? I mean, that's all very, very important stuff. And it's a great conversation to have with your kids if you have kids, you know, to talk to them about why do we have to care? And so the next time we go to a farmer's market or the next time we're talking to a company about, you know, how they source their products, you know, kids can understand why. You know, adults can understand why. I mean, these are really important things today that are really part of the Islamic way of living and of eating. And I think we kind of need to revive that in our community. We need to really open those discussions. And Ramadan is such a perfect time for that, because essentially we don't really need to eat a whole lot. We just need to eat enough to keep us going, you know, nutrient dense, powerful foods that get us through the day. So this is a great time to say, I'm going to maximize the food on my plate, right? I'm going to maximize its potential. And when I do that, I'm really looking for wholesome foods that are packed with nutrition. And where do you get that kind of stuff? You get that stuff from people who really care about how they grow their herbs and their produce. I mean, I talk to farmers at the farmer's market about their tomatoes. Like, you know, how are you growing them and what do you use? And, you know, you get so much information from talking to the source. And then when you eat that tomato and it tastes like a real tomato, you really don't need a lot of those, but you appreciate it and it's packed with nutrition and that's what your body needs. And then when we're done, we don't have to overdo it. We just have to kind of maximize the potential that food has. And we can really do that, particularly in the summer. So I feel really passionate about that subject.
No, absolutely. And it sounds like when you said talk to, like, the farmers about the food and where they sourced it, that sounds like a great opportunity to also just get to know the larger community as well. Like, you're branching out, not just within the Muslim community, but then just, mm-hmm. like, I guess, like, Chicago has a downtown Chicago farmers market that comes, I think, every Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I was just at the Green City Market yesterday, and met several farmers that I was able to talk to and ask about, you know, how they grow their herbs. There was one farmer I spoke to. I know that they can't always say that their product is organic because they need the certification, but they don't always spray chemicals on their plants. So it's a conversation starter. It's like, okay, you're not certified organic, but do you spray? No, we don't. But obviously we can't say that because we're not, you know, technically certified, but you still want to support them because they're doing a great thing. And then you ask them a few questions and they will just talk and tell you, you know, about what they just picked that morning. You know, one farmer was telling me, these are the first strawberries of the season. And that was so special, right? I mean,
yeah.
They were beautiful. They smelled fragrant. They just picked them. It was the first, you know, pick of the season. And I've enjoyed them today so much because there's like a story behind it. But also, they're some of the best strawberries I've ever had.
Yeah.
So I think getting to know where your food is coming from is a it sounds very cliche because we hear about it a lot, but yeah. we really, really can do it, particularly here in Chicago. You know, there are several farmers markets. The Green City Market is Wednesdays and Saturdays, and you can, all of the producers are approachable. You know, just start talking to them, and they'll tell you so much about their farms and so on. But it's a wonderful opportunity. I say if you have kids, bring them.
Yeah. And besides, like, just the taste, are there any benefits to it besides, again, just taste or...
Besides what? I'm sorry.
Besides taste, are there any benefits to, I guess, eating maybe just local source or closer to local source foods and veggies?
Well, yeah, nutrition-wise, yes, I think there's usually the less that food has to travel, the better it is for you because you're eating it, you know, fresher. You're supporting local economies, local farmers. You're getting to know your region, where you live, and what grows in your region. Which means that, you know, if you wanted to grow something in your backyard, just talk to your farmers, and they could probably tell you, you know, hey, buy certain produce, and you can collect the seeds, and then you know, put them in your own garden. I mean, there's just so many benefits to knowing what is local to your area.
Absolutely. And then I guess you said collecting seeds. I guess people could probably start planting. Maybe would it be too late to plant vegetables this late in the season? Summer, is it too hot or still possible?
Well, so it depends on what you're growing. So right now you can start growing cold weather crops like lettuce. Strawberries only if you have a greenhouse, but lettuce, anything like greenery, you can start now. You can actually get lettuce within a few weeks if you plant the seeds. And so this is a really good time in Chicago to start that. But anything hot, whether crops like tomatoes and zucchinis, you'd have to start them indoors in a sunny window or a greenhouse. You could definitely start that now and then move them outdoors after the danger of any frost passes, which is probably... You know, it keeps getting later and later. I mean, it used to be Mother's Day when we would plant tomatoes several years back. But now I don't plant anything in the ground that's a hot weather crop until Father's Day. It's just really, you know, it's just getting, you know, further and further out. So you just have to kind of read up on, you know, the region that you live in. But I'd say in Chicago right now you could start growing things inside and then transplant them outside in the middle of June.
Wow, that's actually kind of great because I thought it was definitely too late to participate in that.
No. And, you know, for people who don't have a big yard or garden, I say, you know, I just bought jalapeno plants and the habanero plants at the farmer's market because I want to do pots. I want to just do, you know, pots on the patio. Mm-hmm. And I asked my farmer, I said, you know, which ones do you recommend? They don't need a lot of space. He told me exactly how to pot it and what size pot that I would need to keep it, you know, to keep it from, you know, the roots from suffocating. So you learn so much just by talking to good people. They love what they do. They're passionate about what they grow. And so, and now, you know, farmers markets aren't just selling, they're not just selling the produce, they're selling the plants, which is wonderful. So I mixed it up this year. I bought, you know, some fresh berries and things like that, but I also bought plants because they did all the work in their greenhouse to get the plant to be really nice and strong.
Nice.
And I'm just going to keep them indoors until it gets really hot, and then I'll put them outside in pots. So it's great. It's really, you know, convenient.
Wow, that sounds pretty awesome. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break real quick. So when we get back, we will continue the conversation and we'll talk, I guess, a little bit more about food and all the good stuff. If you have any questions, though, please feel free to give us a call at 312-263-4752. We'd love to hear your questions, your thoughts, any of your comments, because it's Ramadan. Joy, thank you.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction. But where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
I shoved the envelope under my sweater and sneaked to the kitchen. Mom was on the phone in the front room. I didn't want to have to explain anything. I just wanted to be by myself. Clutching the envelope tightly, I stepped onto the ladder at the bottom of the treehouse. Something caught my eye above me, and I looked up. Light! It looked as if there were a firework display going on inside the treehouse. Crackling and snapping and whizzing sounds spun around above my head. Light shot out in sparks, dancing to the popping of noise. My first thought was to scream fire and run to the house to get Mom. My legs trembled as I inched upward, creeping up the rungs as quietly as I could. My heart banged so hard that it felt as if someone were hitting my chest. A couple more steps, and then I leaned forward, craning my neck to look inside. And then I looked up and saw... To find out what happens next, read Philippa Fisher's Fairy Godsister by Liz Kessler. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library. And visit read.gov, brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Radio Islam is pleased to bring you another signature production, Nutrition That Fits, with registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator, Hannah El Amin.
This is registered dietitian Hannah El Amin for Radio Islam with Nutrition That Fits, giving nutrition advice that fits your life, your needs, and your goals. Welcome to part two of our pre-Ramadan nutrition series. As we mentioned last week, Ramadan is just a few weeks away, and this Ramadan is set to bring us some of the longest days of fasting we may have in our lifetime. With only about 7 hours for eating and drinking, much of which will be spent sleeping. In our pre-Ramadan nutrition series, we hope to provide some tips to make the most of those 7 hours and help you make every bite and every sip count. Have you ever wondered about the wisdom behind breaking our fast with dates? Of course, this is the tradition of our blessed Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. And we follow his traditions out of love and honor for him. But did you also know that dates are packed with some of the best nutrients for breaking our fast? Firstly, they have a high glycemic index. That means that they quickly help raise your blood sugar after a long day of fasting. They are also packed with potassium. Potassium helps maintain your body's hydration, electrolyte balance, and blood pressure, all of which are highly important when fasting. Dates happen to be one of the highest potassium foods that you could possibly eat. But the benefits of dates don't stop there. They're a good source of fiber, antioxidants, and protein with many amino acids that aren't normally found in fruits. They also have B vitamins, selenium, iron, and vitamins A and K. Many researchers and health professionals consider dates to be a nearly ideal and nutritionally complete food. You would be hard-pressed to find this wide a variety of health benefits in any other food. Dates are a great example of the complexity and depth of the wisdom of our beloved Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. So when you break your fast this Ramadan and take that bite into your first date, know that you're doing your body a world of good. For a link to this segment and more Nutrition That Fits recordings, be sure to log on to the Radio Islam Facebook page. For more on this topic, be sure to log on to nutritionthatfits.com/Ramadan. Until next time, this is registered dietitian Hannah El Amin for Radio Islam with Nutrition That Fits, giving nutrition advice that fits your life, your needs, and your goals.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago. We reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com, where you can view all of our prior shows. Radio Islam is a call-in talk show every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. We are live tonight. We had a few couple of pre-records the past few days, but we are back on air, and we're talking with Yvonne Maffey on different type of things that we can do for Ramadan. We kind of last left off with actually incorporating halal, but specifically also just locally, not just locally sourced, but more ethically sourced food, looking out for not just your food sources, but the people, the animals, how everyone is treated. So as we come back, I kind of speaking a little bit more to that, what can people do, I guess, to, we talked about going to the farmer's market and like talking with people, but I know like when I was reading your book, My Halal Kitchen, there were surprisingly a lot of things that I thought were not like they were halal or permissible or okay, and it turns out like they're, you know, you might want to pay attention to like how your mayonnaise is made or something like that. So are there any sort of like ways we can be a little bit more conscious of it during Ramadan in particular, or anything you recommend?
Hey, it's interesting that you observed that, because one of the things I discovered in researching for this book, all, you know, halal substitutes and things that you would need to kind of, you know, make your own product, make your own condiments and sauces to avoid any, you know, questionable ingredients, is that it's the fascinating part of it is that anyone could be interested in what I learned, in the sense that there's so much that goes on in the food industry that's added to our food that whether you eat a halal diet or not, you'd be interested and want to know what they're making. What they're adding to things like mayonnaise or salad dressings, anything from like tons of sugar,
yeah,
or ingredients like in mayonnaise, emulsifiers. Emulsifier, when you make your own mayonnaise, for example, you add an emulsifier to thicken the mayonnaise, right? To, mm-hmm. to keep it like, you know, to make it the consistency that we're used to. So to do that naturally, you know, at home, you would use an egg. But in the commercial world, they use artificial things, artificial products. And some of those emulsifiers can come from pork sources. And that's, you know, true for not just mayonnaise, but yogurt, even hummus sometimes has gelatin in it. Mm. And that's to kind of keep it nice and firm. And that gelatin might come from a non-halal source. So it's really important for people to pay attention to food labels. And again, this goes back to conscious living, conscious eating, and it sometimes can be a real hassle. I mean, I don't want to spend 2 hours at the grocery store. I want to spend, you know, a very short amount of time, get what I need, and go.
Right.
But if I have to read labels, I will. What I tried to do in the book was to say, here are some ingredients that are just, you know, pretty questionable in the market. You have to really, if you're going to buy them, then be aware that certain things could be included. And if you really just say, you know what, that sounds so easy to make, I'm going to just do it myself, mm-hmm. then I have recipes for that. You know, different types of salad dressings, your condiments, like Dijon mustard. Dijon mustard almost always has white wine in it. Otherwise, it's really not a true Dijon mustard. But you can make your own with the recipe in my book. So I feel like it was really just knowing what goes on in the food industry. So it's not just meat we're looking at. Meat is a huge thing. We have to look at slaughter and how the animal was raised. But your everyday products also have a lot of things in them that I think people who are interested in clean eating really wouldn't want to purchase. So there's a lot of people I talk to that I know who are vegans and vegetarians, and they're all reading food labels too. So they're really interested in, you know, what's in this product. Is there an animal product? Is there something that I don't feel is very clean? You know, and we can resonate with that very well.
No, absolutely. And I think it's funny because you've mentioned like gelatin and hummus, and it's kind of like that feels like it should be an, you know, easy go-to place that, you know, like there's no meat in hummus. It's just chickpeas and tahini sauce and whatever else you want to put into it. And then you find there's a gelatin product. That's kind of, I guess, kind of eye-opening, I guess, when you think about like what actually goes into our food.
Right.
So, yeah.
Especially when you let's say, you know, you make your yogurt at home. You know what goes into, or your bread. Some people are bread makers. There should only be a few ingredients in those products, right? So when you start looking at food labels and saying, oh, here's a container of yogurt, but it has way more than what I use to make it at home, and you're starting to question, why are all those things being included? And a lot of it has to do with, life shelf, the how long that product can last on the shelf. And a lot of it also has to do with they're creating volumes and volumes and volumes of this product, so they need to keep costs down. So a lot of times that cheapens the ingredients. And sometimes cheap ingredients are bad for our health. So we have to really, pay attention to what can we do to kind of make our... Where are the shortcuts that... We don't want to spend a lot of time in the kitchen. No one has time to be in the kitchen 2 to 3 hours a day.
Right.
But maybe there's something, particularly for Ramadan, that you can do now to kind of get yourself set. Like, you can make 3 different kinds of salad dressing that will be fine for the first week or two of Ramadan. And, those recipes are in my book. You can make your own extracts for baking if you wanted to. I mean, I have recipes for, like, your own coconut extract or almond extract or... that could be some fun project to do with the kids. And then when you're baking, you've made your own non-alcoholic sources of extract. So there's things you can do now to kind of have those condiments, a soy sauce alternative. Most people don't realize that a natural soy sauce has alcohol in it. And there are at least one halal certified soy sauce in it, but... again, are there synthetic ingredients in that? I don't know. So I have an alternative in the book that is so simple to make, but it can last you the whole month of Ramadan. So if you're making Chinese food and Korean food and you want to add soy sauce, there's no issue. And you can just go to your fridge, grab the soy sauce alternative, add it, and I swear it tastes just like soy sauce. So those are, some really, interesting things that I learned when I was researching with what really goes on in the food industry and what we can do to circumvent the problematic stuff.
How long did it take you to research all of that? Sounds like it's like a lengthy project.
I had the recipes were pretty much in place since the beginning. I had this project idea for a very long time. But when it came down to researching, substitutes and so on, there was a lot of experimentation that I've done for the last 10 years, but the food industry stuff really kind of gave me pause and reflection on, okay, this is not just about halal, this is also about diet. And so it took me about 3 years. And even at the end of the 3 years, I had to revise and do all the updates on what was really going on in food and, what was old news, what was new news. So it was definitely a project that is very close to my heart, and I feel like hopefully, inshallah, it gives people some really good information, and it's a resource. It's not just a recipe book. It's really a resource and gives a lot of foundational recipes, a lot of information on substitutes for pork and alcohol, but also what are, problematic things and what you can do about it. So here are some reasons, why we have to pay attention to our food, but then here are the solutions. And so in the French chapter, for example, you have classic French recipes made halal, but you can take those elements of, what to substitute for red wine or white wine, and you can use that in other recipes, whether it's French cooking or Italian cooking. So it's a really, I think, more of a resource book for anybody who's interested in making those substitutes, and not just for halal. Maybe there are people out there who they don't want alcohol in their diet for other reasons. So, those are just some things to think about. And, just hoping that, people will want it on their shelves is a great resource for all their cooking.
Cool. And so when I was actually pitching the show to my boss, he was like, okay, but Ramadan is not specifically about food only. So how can we also make Ramadan a little bit less about food as well, from preparation, anything else, or just more preparation?
It's so funny because this is honestly my busiest work month every year. It's the month that I am the absolute busiest, mashallah. But I think that we have to eat, right? We want to eat. And Ramadan, we look forward to our iftar. We look forward to our suhoor. But that said, I think, again, I keep going back to this conscious living format that I feel it gives us that opportunity. We're already in reflection in Ramadan. We're already thinking about so many things and getting closer to our Lord and getting closer to knowing our religion better. And food, we have a relationship with food as human beings. So let's make that relationship a healthier one. This is a wonderful time to think much more deeply about the food choices we make in the future. We can't just rush through life not thinking about what we put into our shopping carts and into our mouths and feeding our kids and feeding our families. We really, really need to say, there's some certain things that I'm not going to do anymore. You know, I'm finding out that certain foods are just really bad for our family. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to make a conscious effort to plant a few plants, or we're going to make a conscious effort to, you know, take a Saturday morning and go to the farmer's market together. You know, these are things that can bond with the family, make, you know, make people think about their commitment to a healthier lifestyle. So yes, it's not about the overconsumption of food, but I think that the focus on food can be a really healthy and life-changing one. I think every Ramadan should change us a little bit. Yeah. You know, I feel like I learned something different in every Ramadan because there's a certain focus on something, you know. But I feel like by the end of Ramadan, I don't need a lot of food. And that's a very liberating feeling that, you know, we have to eat, but we don't have to overeat. And that's pretty liberating to feel like you're not nervous about where your food is coming from. Allah's going to provide it. And let's ask for barakah in that food, and inshallah we get barakah in that food when we source it properly, and you know, we're sure that it's not just halal, but it's also tayyib. I mean, it's a really, you know, important thing to, I think, focus on as a community too.
No, and you mentioned one part that I'm glad you brought up, was just after Ramadan, even though we have, you know, a long way to go, but I think after Ramadan, I think it's kind of weird when you're like, whoa, I can eat during the daytime, and B, you realize that you're not necessarily, you know, you're not eating as much, or not as much, but not like, you learn throughout the day, like how much you eat, maybe snacking for the sake of snacking. And so is there like any recommendations, I guess, on kind of continuing those good eating habits, or like, you know, cutting back on excess eating or snacking? Anything you recommend?
You know, I think that's such a great question. And I just want to, you know, kind of chime in with something for perspective. I actually started fasting before I was Muslim because I wanted to try it. I thought it was kind of really interesting. I could not understand how people could go without food. And I realized when I started fasting, well, it was in the winter, so it was really easy, you know. So if I was like at 4:30, and I thought, you know, this is pretty easy. And another Muslim who knew that I was fasting said to me, you know, oh, you just wait until it happens in the summer. And I thought, oh, yeah, right, you know, but I don't know when that will be. But I thought, when I became Muslim and I thought about Ramadan, there was a little fear inside of me, like, how will I really make it? How will I survive without food? Then I realized, you know, there's so much wisdom in the reason for fasting. And for me personally, I kind of needed to get over my food insecurity. I had a food insecurity, I would say, that, you know, worrying about where our food is going to come from. Is there going to be enough? I mean, that was an emotional thing. And I think fasting helped me to get over that insecurity, and also to kind of relax when, okay, there's no food around, but there will be food. Allah provides. You know, you learn to trust your Lord so much.
Yeah.
When you are fasting. I mean, maybe that's my personal experience, but there's something that happens in you physically too. You know, you calm down. You know, you kind of. You're hungry, so yes, you are feeling what people who can't break their fat, people who are food insecure all the time, you feel what they would feel. So there's something psychological, physical, emotional, spiritual that happens in that fast. And I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly how you wanted, but I feel like there's some perspective. You know, what is that lesson we're going to learn this month of Ramadan? What is that lesson we're going to learn in relation to abstaining from food and water the whole day?
Yeah.
You know, what is it that's bringing us closer to God? What are some reflections we have? I know for a fact that when I have that first iftar, it's the best meal I've had all year.
Yeah.
It's so tasty and so delicious. The gratitude is there, the appreciation, the relief.
Yeah.
You know, it's an amazing feeling. So if we could all just kind of focus on that moment of breaking your fast and, you know, what that means to us, I think, you know, everyone's going to walk away with a different experience, but I have personally felt such a difference in my own life just by fasting.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, that's actually all we have time for, unfortunately. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been wonderful talking to you, getting some ideas, and just hearing about ways we can make Ramadan successful this year. So, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor to be here. And Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Mubarak. Yeah, I guess 2 days or one day, really. So, yeah.
In advance.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
You're welcome, Olivia. You take care. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, you have been listening to Radio Islam, a live daily talk show every day from 6 to 7 p.m., 7 days a week. And we were just talking to Yvonne Maffey about Ramadan food ideas and everything like that. So if you have any questions, comments about the show, or in general want to hear our past shows, go to our soundcloud.com/Radio Islam USA, where you can stream, download, comment. You can also catch us on iTunes and Google Play and stream straight from your phone. And don't forget to rate and view our podcast. That way we know how to better serve you. And follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at Radio Islam USA. The executive producer of Radio Islam is Abdul Malik Mujahid. Your producer today has been Olivia Richardson. Our engineer this evening is Leonard Murphy. Radio Islam is a Sound Vision Foundation production. The views expressed are the views of the host and the guest, not a Sound Vision Foundation. I'm your host, Olivia Richardson. Join us tomorrow evening for another great show on Radio Islam. Thank you.